We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Riverfront. This is episode number 422 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week is just to my, I guess on your screen, he's to my left. It's up or to your right. I don't understand how directions work, but it's Nate somewhere. Nate, how are you?
I'm great, Chad. It's good to be here. Wick, we are glad to have you. And you know, Chad, I feel like you're always asking us how we are. So I want to know, the viewers want to know, how are you?
Well, after I saw that artwork over your shoulder there, I'm not very good. Nate Reference, our other guest here today, once again from redreporter.com, your friend and mine, Wick Terrell. How are you, Wick?
I'm good. Yeah, you said left and right, and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, which side is my mustache dipping down on? Is that left or is that right? I can't try to get this straight over here. So, but yes, thank you for having me back, guys, to talk about our wonderful, lovely, favorite baseball team, the Cincinnati Reds. Yeah.
We have to remind ourselves at the beginning of each of these shows, we have to keep laughing. We got to try to have some fun with it because I don't know what else to do, right?
This picture has nothing to do with the Reds. I'm just really trying to tell my fiance that she needs to
school. Oh, there you go. I look forward to making sure that she does view this, at least the first couple of minutes of this show, you know, for the first time ever. Wick, you had a tweet earlier. You do the tweets, right, sometimes?
I always have a tweet for something, yeah. Whether it's idiotic or not, there's pretty much a tweet for it, yeah.
What frustrated me is the fact that you were comparing this to that horrific, was it 2018 season, when the Reds started out so 3-18, and this is all, and the Reds are now 3-16, and they look awfully similar, right?
They look incredibly similar. Yeah, that was all of 5 years ago. It dawned on me last night that they had the same exact record as they did back in the glory days of the 2018 season. So I tapped our friend, former Red reporter, managing editor Joel Luckup, who's the statistician for former Fox Sports Ohio, now Bally Sports, I believe. Basically saying, how many times has any franchise in baseball had 2 3-15 starts within a 5-year window? And it's basically three times ever. It was the early aughts Detroit Tigers, who were just classically terrible, and the Mets, the amazing Mets back in 62-63. That's it. Those are the only other times any other franchise since 1901 has had 2 3-15 or worse starts in a 5-year window. So, comparing that to an era that doesn't seem like it's that long ago, especially given everything we've gone through the last 2 years of trying to experience sports and watch baseball, it's like we're right back where we started, and they never got anywhere in the meantime. So, you know?
Well, yes, but, you know, what's frustrating is I'll go back and look at those other teams, but I'm sure that none of those had a quote-unquote playoff appearance. Of course, playoffs were different back then, but at least had an above 500 team and a couple of teams that were non-losing teams in between those 3-15 starts. It's so frustrating and kind of emblematic of what we're dealing with this ownership that will not commit to a plan longer than, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago.
it's like everything is so perilously thin just to get them to 83 wins that the moment you don't have all things pointed directly at exactly where you're trying to get to, the whole thing just falls completely apart. And it's what happened post 2015. It's what's happening right now. You know, certainly there are plenty of unfortunate circumstances that have gone into why they're 3-16 right now. Like, got to be clear about that. No doubt about it. But it's like the enthusiasm, the momentum, all of that, you know, intangible crap that's so hard to quantify. That's why it's intangible, Wick. All of that just immediately evaporated. And so even the good stuff that you thought might have a chance of potentially happening this year has just been like overwhelmed by this tsunami of bad everything else. And here we are, you know, and it's another season where before we even get to the end of April, we're pretty much waiting for football season.
Again. Okay. Oh, NFL draft. Thank you.
We just found the title of this episode, Tsunami of Bad.
Tsunami of Bad.
Yeah, write that down, Nate. Yeah, I mean, but I don't know what you all are complaining about, frankly. And Nate, I'll ask you to address this because last week on the show, and of course, Wick wasn't with us last week, you know, it was a rough week. The Reds were in the middle of an 11-game winning streak. This week, the Reds won a game. And what do you want? They didn't win any games last week. We did get one victory this week. And who was it against? The St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, really. Break out the champagne.
We're greedy as Reds fans. You know, we want the world. We want it all, and we deserve it. So, yeah, we're not going to complain unless we get perfection. And we only get perfection in the form of Kyle Farmer. Unfortunately, the rest of it didn't line up.
Well, we might as well go there. You know, the Reds are, of course, in the midst of a streak of 13 losses in 14 games. No, 14 losses in 15 games. Oh, my gosh. But can we talk just for a moment, since we're looking for positives, and we're always looking for positives, and because everyone likes to tweet at me every time Kyle Farmer does well. Kyle Farmer has had a couple of good games, and I'm happy about Kyle Farmer. I mean, he's not a superstar. He's a slightly above average hitting shortstop right now with defense that I'm not going to complain about. But hey, if we're looking for things to be positive about, I don't know. The guy gets four doubles in one game. And so kudos to him, I guess. Wick, I know you're a charter member of the Kyle Farmer fan club, so I'll let you opine.
Yeah, I think I said something along the lines of Kyle Farmer is going to be a phenomenal pickup for somebody at the trade deadline this year because he's playing well enough to say, I can play anywhere. I can be a shortstop if you need me to be. And we've said this before, he's not a bad baseball player. And if Kyle Farmer is your sixth or seventh best player, you're probably a pretty good team. It's kind of how it was last year. You know, Kyle Farmer was the seventh or eighth best player on the Reds, and so be it. Are there better options in the pipeline? Yeah, you kind of like to think so, but he's playing well, and it's kind of hard to fault him, especially when literally nobody else is playing well. I guess I take that back. We should give Tommy Pham some credit. He signed very, very late in spring, got basically no spring training, and got off to perhaps the worst start in Reds signee history. But then he got a chance to finally face his former team in the San Diego Padres. And over the last 2 weeks, Tommy Pham has been playing like the player that we all hoped he would be. So imagine that. Here we are in 2022, the Cincinnati Reds being carried by Tommy Pham, Kyle Farmer, and Brandon Drury, who also deserves a mention in that category as well.
Oh, yeah, we'll mention all of those. Yeah, absolutely. Kyle Farmer is, you know, he's Kyle Farmer. You're exactly right. If this were a team where the Reds were trying, and he's your short, even if he's your shortstop, but he's, you know, your number seven, number eight hitter, you know, or nine, I guess, even. He had an 87 OPS plus last year. Everyone acts like that was his breakout season, and it kind of was, and he was serviceable. He was fine. He was not the problem with last year's team. He's slightly above average so far this year, and I like having the guy. He can help somebody. He's a in terms of utility guy. He can help a team. I'm not sure
how. Cesar Geronimo was on the Big Red Machine. You know, like you need those kind of players. You just got to have the superstars if you're going to win anything. You know,
right? He can't be your guy. Tommy Pham. You know, I was happy with the Tommy Pham signing. I guess, you know, I mean, it came on the heels of maybe some bad press for selling everyone else. But, in, you know, just as a move by itself, Tommy Pham seemed like a fine guy to take a chance on. And, yeah, you're right. He was – I mean, talk about tsunami of bad. The start to his season was unreal. Just horrible. But, yeah, you know, of course, now he did misplay a ball in left field today that gave up that allowed three runs to come in. Just horrible. But yeah, he's not the problem with this team right now. And then Nate, I'll let you talk about either he or Brandon Drury, who somehow Brandon Drury going to be 30 here before long. He's got three home runs, tied for the team lead in home runs, along with the aforementioned Tommy Pham. So yeah, those guys being your the guys that are you're counting on. My goodness, how did we get here?
I can't say too much about Brandon Drury because I don't know too much about him. He was not on my radar before he was the Cincinnati Red.
Like he's a guy.
I certainly care about the guy now. He's wearing the right uniform, but I'm confused by the whole thing. I do kind of get a laugh of the irony of, and trust me, I don't take any stock in this. Guys are going to say they're going to get their stats. Baseball, you can do that and still help the team. But Tommy Pham getting some grief from Reds fans for saying he was going to chase the numbers and then putting up those numbers against the Padres when the Reds had only lost. I wonder how he's going to reconcile that. But I don't know. You guys just kind of hit the nail on the head. We're getting decent production from decent to below decent players. It's time for the guys that are supposed to be good to be good. Unfortunately, some of those guys aren't on the team anymore, but the ones we do have had really rough starts.
Yeah, the one everyday player, I mean, I guess Tyler Naquin, of course, he's been hurt. He's fine. But the one everyday player that I've been happy with, obviously, is Tyler Stevenson.
No.
But, of course, Tyler Stevenson is injured now. Got the concussion, hopefully back soon. But he's been everything you could have asked for. But everyone else just basically has had their struggles. And speaking of struggles, what I want to talk about is struggles related to our buddy Phil, perhaps. But have you seen the attendance numbers recently? Now, you know, I don't know. They always say the kids are still in school, so the attendance in this time of the year at Great American Ballpark is not always great. The attendance over the weekend was not bad, necessarily, with the Cardinals in. A lot of Cardinals fans there. But in the Padres series, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 10,000, 9,100. And I think today, Thursday, they had a little over 10,000, 10.4. Not good attendance numbers. Is that indicative of something other than just it's a bad baseball team, or are people staying away because of all the negative vibes around the team? What do you think, Wick?
Yeah. Both. Right. You know, I think the Reds and the ownership group and the COO made their bed and are laying in it right now, pretty much, you know, and, you know, no.
I don't want to put you in a tough spot here, but some comments from earlier.
Sorry, I had to drop that in. I'm sorry. Still into our lives.
Oh no. I mean, but it's the truth, you know. It's very much indicative of knowing what the priorities are of the people you're giving money to, and the moment you know that, you realize where your priorities are. And I think for a lot of fans right now, especially, and granted, it's not been the best weather there today. It's a show me something before I come back kind of thing. And, you know, I think there's also a large, you know, there's kind of two trends of thought here. After going through the pandemic and everything of the last 2 years, and people still kind of, you know, there's kind of like two different diverging thoughts there. Some people are just so itching to go out and do everything they haven't done in 2 years. Some people realize they don't need a lot of stuff that they used to do, and have found other ways to enjoy themselves. And I think what you're seeing with the Reds also is that a lot of people couldn't go to Reds games for a while, and now they're here. And it's been 2.5-3 years since they last really went out of their way to go to Reds games. And for a team that is, yes, in Cincinnati, but is very much a regional team, you know, you're not going to see people driving from Dayton or Louisville or Lexington or Columbus to go see this baseball team after everything they said and after the product they put on the field and everything they did over the course of the winter. It's not like you're the Yankees and you're a train stop away, or you can hear Yankee Stadium from the homes of 2 million people because it's so close. The Reds don't have that part of them. And so for them to alienate fans that have to go way out of the way to show up for weekday games like this, yeah, you're going to get these kind of numbers, and I don't think that's going to change. You could throw a 5-game win streak in right now, and this time next week it's going to be the same exact numbers because nobody's planning ahead to come to these games based on everything we've seen happen over the last couple months and the soundbite that you were about to play.
Yeah, you know, certainly. And Nate, before we started recording, Nate and I were just briefly chatting with the NBA playoffs. And one thing I realized over during that pandemic was, you know, I don't miss it. I don't, the NBA, I just, you know, I don't have a team that I really care enough about to really like the Reds. You know, I'm just, I guess we're pot committed here, but I just
sadly,
right? I know. Yeah, exactly.
I recommend I don't need it anymore. Both teams, you find distractions. It's probably better for you.
Well, maybe, but says Nate, who's not really paying attention now because he's watching the Phoenix Suns, I believe, out of the corner of his eye. So I can see how that would be the case, especially in Cincinnati, which depends on it being more of a regional draw. Now, Nate, I'd like to respond to this. To me, yeah, I've made the case that – well, not just me. A lot of people made the case. The Reds don't really need attendance necessarily to make money. You know, that's not their necessarily their business plan. They've got lots of other revenue streams. But if there are ever going to be any kind of real change, and I don't know if there ever will be with the Castellanos, I'm not, you know, foolish enough to get my hopes up about that. But it seems like it would have to be some version of not much attendance because they notice that at the ball yard. Plus some of the things we've seen at the ballpark lately. Now, I don't think we've talked about it. I think it was since last week's show, but someone rented a plane with a banner behind it that says, "Where are you going to go? I'm already gone. Thanks, Phil." And flew that near Great American Ballpark on game day. And then we've had at least three instances of people wearing bags on their heads that say "Sell the team, Bob," and they being threatened to be ejected out of the stadium if they didn't take the bags off. And of course, the Reds came out with another one of their pathetic apologies for that. We handled it wrong. Sorry. Yeah, right. It seems like it's the first time in a long time they've ever actually gotten any real pushback, this ownership group. And so, yeah, I'm not foolish enough to think there's going to be actual change, but maybe the things are kind of – the perfect storm is occurring here to do that. What do you think, Nate?
Well, if you had to put a percentage on it, that chance is certainly higher now than it ever has been. I'm not saying it's high. But if it was zero, maybe it's 0.1. Maybe it's one. I don't know. Things pretty much could not, other than one win. They were one win away from going literally as poorly as they possibly could for Phil and the crew. Cincinnati, we say it all the time. They're a baseball town. So if this team was good, there'd be butts in seats. People want to watch a good team. They're starved for it because it's been such a rare thing in Cincy. Whoever the legend was that flew that banner over, I wish somebody that I knew could take credit for that because, I mean, that's awesome. That's commitment.
People on Twitter were giving me credit for it. I had no idea what was going on. Like, oh, man, I wish it was me. Is this you, Chad? Is this you? I wish. Yeah, legend, right?
Kicking the tires on it. But no, some anonymous person, you know, the hero we deserve and the hero we need. He's all the heroes. The bag thing, I think it's hilarious. I think and I'm sure that the people that were wearing those bags were just trying to get a laugh, trying to get on camera, trying to, you know, get on Twitter, get some shout outs. Once again, the Reds fumbled the ball. It was handled disastrously. Especially during the interview, like, you could have waited until after the interview for them to go make the wrong decision. But I don't know.
In the middle of a TV interview, if you didn't see it. The ushers came up, not ushers, but the team's representative came up during the middle of a TV interview to tell them to take it off. Anyway, go ahead.
I try to be optimistic about this thing. Like, I want this team to be good. I want to care. I know that there's a lot of negativity surrounding everything Reds related right now, and I wish that wasn't the case. I would like to, you know, at least be like a little bit of an influence in the other direction if I can, but they made it almost impossible. Like, I thought my shtick as a part of this show was going to be the optimistic guy, be the happy guy. Guys, the Reds, it's fine. We're always bad. We'll have a good time with it. Man, they're making it hard for me.
And the thing about it is though, like, and we've said this before, and we've said it in numerous different places and numerous different medias and outlets, whatever. You know, the idea that your payroll becomes too bloated and you have to trim it down and you got to let a few veterans go and you got to start a kind of a rebuild, it's not a foreign concept. It happens in every single sport. It happens cyclically all the time. A, the hope is that you actually won something before you started doing that, which the Reds didn't. B, you hope it's not the first time that the team ownership and GM is doing it, which is not the case. It's the third freaking time that the Castellanos have been going through this as well. And C, there's got to be a promise of youth that's set to be the future that you can at least like close your eyes and ignore the standings and look at these are the guys I'm going to be watching for the next 7 or 8 years and focus on them and watch them going forward. And Jonathan Emmy has been hurt. Tyler Stevens is still hurt. Hunter Green lost 8 miles an hour off his fastball mysteriously and got skipped, and Nick Lodolo hit the injured list today. So it's like, even if I'm just like, you know, keeping my tunnel vision away and ignoring the last 27 years and the last 5 years, all that other stuff, and focusing on what it is that they're actually trying to build around, even that's not going right now either. And so it's so hard to find literally any thread to grasp and go on this. And to kind of segue slightly on this, which I think we're going to get to anyway, is that, you know, for so long over the last, 14, 15 years, when that's happened for the Cincinnati Reds, which has been often, there's always been at least one thing for me specifically that I've been able to kind of tunnel my vision towards and turn to, and that's watching Joey Votto play and watching him be this singular, otherworldly, unique unicorn of a figure in baseball and watch him do his thing when he comes to the plate once every 2 or 3 innings and get over the fact that the rest of it's not going so well. And now he's having the worst month of his career as well and looks completely lost at the plate. And when you run through all of that, you run through the injuries, you run through even the good parts that are still around in the Reds that aren't even on the field because most of them are hurt also, there really is basically nothing that we've been able to tie ourselves to over the last 4 weeks of baseball. And I'm not sure I've ever been in that position with the Cincinnati Reds before. And we've been through a lot of really bad baseball, but I've never seen it, I don't think, quite as poor as it's been the last couple of weeks. And unfortunate. It's been unfortunate and poor at the same time.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about Votto in just a moment, but I do want to get your thoughts very quickly here, Wick, on are you surprised at the – is it just that it's a perfect storm, but are you surprised that the fans are actually – kind of making a little bit tiny bit of protest here? I mean, and why haven't we seen it before? Maybe it's just because all these things you talk about have come together at one time.
I think the why haven't we seen it before is actually the question that I have kind of turned myself internally towards asking. And I think it's a worthwhile question that I don't have the answer to. But I think the fact that there are enough fans that have been through this entire process that have been kind of stuck in this rut that the Reds have put them through for so long. I don't think it's surprising this time around. And I think it's the kind of thing that good baseball towns, which Cincinnati is, it 100% is, that's got to be there. You know, the lack of satisfaction with extended, poorly planned and poorly executed attempts at being a top-tier baseball team, that alone has to frustrate a fan base, but to do it with such frugality, and such just indifference to the fans, at the same point in time, you can't tolerate that. I'd feel, you know, miffed at Cincinnati Reds fans if they weren't annoyed and pissed a little bit about this, frankly. So, I don't like to be too much of a rabble rouser. I probably am too much of a rabble rouser, but still, I'm encouraged by the fact that this is where we're kind of drawing our line in the sand and saying, okay, if you want to be like this, fine, but you're going to hear about it, and you're going to hear about it as often as we can possibly tell it to you, whether it's through billboards, whether it's through podcasts, or whether it's through a legend putting a message behind a plane and flying it over Great American Ballpark. Exactly.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, it's just maybe the like I keep using the term the perfect storm, and then the flame was lit ablaze by Phil Castellini, and we're off. I mean, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. Final thoughts on that, Nate? Or you want to go to Joey Votto?
I think it's just, you know, Phil asked Reds fans to have a little faith, and I think that they had faith for a long time, and they ran out. Combine that with just the way that he completely, you know, mishandled that fiasco. You took an annoyed fan base that was about it, but they were going to get mad on Twitter, and they were going to get mad for a week, and then baseball was going to come back, and they were going to forget. Well, everything that has happened since the home opener has not allowed anyone to forget. And then there are people like, you know, us, and then the guy on the plane. You know, they're not letting people forget, and I think that is going to be one of the more interesting subplots to keep an eye on throughout the rest of the season. I hate it for the players. I wish this was not the case. I would far prefer a full Great American Ballpark with a competitive, fun club and a raucous atmosphere, but they've given fans no reason to go out there and show that kind of support.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, let's okay. Enough of that. We talk about that entirely too much, although I have fun with it. We do need to talk about Joey Votto.
So we're going to go to a nice rosy, positive topic. Huh?
There are no rosy, positive conversations we could have here. But, you know, Joey, I've tried to be positive. My Cincinnati Magazine column this week is about the five first-round picks from Tyler Stevenson to Nick Lodolo, I guess, that are, you know, all on the team now and contributing and trying to – but none of them can stay healthy. I mean, you know, Stevenson's not healthy. Hunter Green – as we said, he incredible. We've talked about it, but as Wick noted, you know, lost all this velocity in his last start, and they're skipping his start. Nick Lodolo, we'll mention it later maybe, but he went on the injured list today, which, you know, had a lower back strain, I believe, on the heels of his best start. I mean, he was outstanding in his last start. Nick Senzel is one of those first round picks. He's Nick Senzel. Yeah, he's not been the guy because of injury and poor performance. He had a big hit today, though, right? Or was that yesterday? They're running together. Not today. But anyway, and of course, Jonathan India, who was fabulous last year, but he's barely been seen this year. So I was trying to be positive. But Joey Votto, his batting average, because that's the most important stat, obviously, is down to 129. His OPS, 444. He has zero home runs. He has three runs batted in to this point in the season. And, Nate, I'll just – any thoughts about Joey Votto? I'm at the point where I'm never going to doubt Joey Votto again. But man, he looks lost. He just looks lost.
Yeah, it's sad. It's honestly – it makes me sad. I have the most confidence that he's going to turn it around. He's – too good of a hitter, too professional of a ball player to, you know, for this to be a season long sort of thing. Cause people fall off cliffs all the time. Not like this. This is a full on, like, can opener into the pool from the high dive, three flips in the air. He's got to turn it around, doesn't he?
I hope so. He's 38. I'm not going to doubt him, but. He's not going to be this bad, but what can we expect from Joey Wick? Do we even know? Is there any way we can know?
I keep trying to tell myself that even if Joey Votto had been something akin to what Joey Votto was last year, with everything else that's gone on with the Reds, they would probably be, what, 4-15 instead of where they are right now. So I keep trying to tell myself that how poorly he's been throughout the course of this month is not the reason the Reds are where they are. It doesn't help. Obviously, I think I threw it on Twitter earlier today that entering play today, which was once again not a powerful day for Joey Votto, there were 212 Major League Baseball players who logged at least 50 plate appearances this year. Three of them had lower slugging percentages than Joey Votto, and all three of them are middle infielders. That's not good, you know. That's decidedly not good. And a couple things are at play here where I don't know really where to go with it. You know, we've been able to read, thanks to Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic, we've been able to read about his bat change, which is one part, you know, based in science and going with the hockey puck handle and everything else. It's another part the fact that it's hard for him to find the old bats that he used to have. So there had to be some sort of change there. But obviously that hasn't worked a ton. He thought he hit a home run in Dodger Stadium that looked like it was a home run that didn't give him a home run. So he showed he can still absolutely crush a baseball when he cues one up, and that didn't count towards his total. We know the baseball has been deadened. You know, we mentioned Nick Senzel a minute ago. Perhaps the greatest thing that's happened in the entire course of the Reds' week is the fact that we saw Nick Senzel hit a ball that would have been a home run in most years and wasn't today. That's the optimist in me saying, oh, Nick Senzel might look like he's, you know, squaring the ball up again. You know, with Joey, it's just one of those things where I'm going to be patient with him because I think he still has what it takes to be able to be a very good ball player. But he's struggling in a way that I've never really seen him struggle with He's taking walks, which is the Joey Votto we know. I think that's something he's going to lean on as he tries to figure this out. But he's also swinging a lot of bad pitches. He's striking out, and it's going to take a significant amount of work for him to get back to being the Joey we know and to get those numbers anywhere close to where they're supposed to be, because we're inching closer towards the end of April, and they still are where they are.
Yeah, that's what's kind of gotten me the most, is that he just looks uncomfortable in the batter's box. Mm-hmm. His timing is way off. And that's like Gordon Ramsay being uncomfortable in the kitchen. Like, you don't expect Joey Votto to look that way. And that's what's got me kind of nervous.
I was expecting that Guy Fieri was going to be the first celebrity chef mentioned here today.
Flavortown, baby.
Oh, Flavortown. Yeah, the game where Joey Votto went back to his old crouching stance. There, you see me imitating the crouching stance there? If you're not watching on YouTube, you didn't see that. I mean, that's gold, Jerry. Gold. And then goes back to his more upright stance from last year. It just shows that he's always tinkered, but it looked like a guy that's really struggling. And I don't know, I'm surprised I haven't heard more feedback on the social medias about, he's paying too much attention to TikTok, that kind of nonsense that you always hear. I'm surprised I haven't heard. Maybe you all seen that. Because people like to criticize Joey for everything. But I did think it was interesting on Twitter the other day. I saw he was posted some of his Statcast numbers and was kind of poking fun at himself for how bad he's been. He knows, But I just don't know. I'm not going to doubt him, but the early returns are not great. Let's run through some of the transactions for the week. I don't have much to say about any of these. You guys jump in if you want to. Tyler Naquin back. TJ Friedl to AAA. Some people seem to love TJ Friedl. And I don't dislike TJ Friedl, but, I mean, he's TJ Friedl. The Reds acquired a guy named Matt Reynolds from the Mets. Did any of you all know anything about Matt Reynolds before the Reds got him?
No, that he's utility not player? Lopez.
No, I did not.
Exactly.
I did not.
I didn't either. Right. Yeah. So, he was waived by the Mets. The Reds picked him up, designated Ryan Hendricks for assignment. And then, also the Reds activated Jonathan, as we said, added Reynolds to the roster. So he's now a Red. And to do that, they, designated JT Riddle for assignment. JT Riddle, Godspeed. We barely knew you. And they optioned Alejo Lopez to AAA. And we've got a question about Alejo Lopez coming up in viewer mail. I'm going to go ahead and ask it right now. Because, I don't know if either of you have a hot take about Alejo Lopez. But this question comes from John York. Now, John is actually a new member of our Patreon family. And so we're going to welcome John York. We'll give you your Beer League softball position in a moment. But John's question is this. Long-time listener, first-time caller, could you discuss why did you think the Reds hate Alejo Lopez? I would love for someone to help me understand. Do the Reds hate Alejo Lopez, and or do Reds fans think overrate Alejo Lopez? Or is it just the fact that I like saying the name Alejo Lopez? One of those three. Either of you jump in.
I like Alejo Lopez. I do. There's a part of me that thinks, and obviously it's going to take more time than what we've had so far to see what happens when the weather warms up and everything else. But if all the reports about this new dead end baseball where, perfect launch angle and 103 exit velocity off the bat of Nick Senzel barely gets you to the warning track today. If that's the kind of ball that the teams are playing with for the entire season this year, which is no guarantee with Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball, the idea that everybody in the lineup is just going to be somebody who's trying to hit the ball over the fence doesn't carry a whole lot of weight anymore. And Alejo Lopez is not the kind of guy who tries to hit the ball over the fence. And if suddenly putting the ball in play within the confines of a stadium is something that teams are going to have to do to get players on base, maybe you start looking more towards guys that can do that. And that's what he does. That's what he's made a habit of doing. He's done it very well for AAA Louisville. He's not the kind of guy who has a ceiling. I don't think he kind of is what he is, and that might work given how things are going right now. And, I don't really understand, especially given the fact that everybody has been hurt up and down the roster at all the positions he plays, why he doesn't have a spot on this particular active roster at this point. I'm not asking for him to be you know, batting second and the first microphone interview at the end of every single game. But the fact is he's done enough, I think, at AAA Louisville to say he's warranted a little bit more of a chance up here. And if you can't get a chance with these Reds and this decimated roster, something just doesn't add up there for me as well. Yeah.
Right. 31-year-old Matt Reynolds, you know, ahead of him. You've got Colin Moran. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the worst defensive third baseman I've ever seen. Nate, I think you're a, as the kids would say, you're an Alejo Lopez stan, right?
Yeah, I kind of am. I'm pretty hot about this one. It doesn't make any sense to me. I know that there are smarter, more analytical baseball minds than mine, but Alejo Lopez has done one thing since he's been a professional baseball player, and that's hit the baseball. He puts it in play. He's hit for average at almost every stop. I mean, yeah, he's not going to slug a bunch. He's not going to hit a bunch of bombs. But our team is garbage, and this guy gets on base, and he hustles around the base passes on the watch. He is not going to strike out 40 of 42 at-bats or whatever the punisher is, you know, punishing my eyesight. This is really getting on my nerves. I mean, I looked at some of the stats, and going into today, Alejo Lopez, all the small sample size caveats, was third on the team in on-base percentage. Only 10 points from second. He was like sixth in OPS plus. One of the people above him was Brandon Drury, so figure that out. You tied for fourth for the team in wins above replacement. With zero wins above replacement. But
oh.
Better wins below replacement, yes.
There you go, right.
Not bad.
Oh, man.
He can hit the ball. Our offense has been anemic. Why not give him a shot? Instead of putting Colin Moran and his twin brother Jake Fraley out there all the time, just to confuse us because I can't tell them apart.
That's actually true. You know, I was watching the end of the day. I was like, "Oh, Jake Fraley's up." No, it was Colin Moran. I did actually do that this week. Yeah, I mean, Alejo Lopez is Alejo Lopez, but on this team, I'm not sure why he can't catch a break. Since we're trying to be talk about some of Nate's. The guys that Nate stands. I do want to mention, we're looking for positives. Nate has been on this podcast for months pumping up Graham Ashcraft. And Graham Ashcraft has four starts at AAA Louisville so far this season. His ERA, that's earned run average, 1.04 ERA. There's some, you know, he's walking too many guys, and it's not all perfect, but not bad, not bad. I just wanted to give you some kudos, Nate, because you've been talking about Graham Ashcraft. All right, what other – the Reds called up Philip Deal. That was a big deal. I'm sorry. I really apologize for that. Justin Wilson went on the injured list. Did you all see Deal's major league debut, though? Again, there's so little to hang our hats on. That was a fun moment. A bunch of guys there. He pitched well in his major league debut. Good for you, Philip Deal.
What percentage of the crowd was there specifically for Philip Deal?
12.6%, yes, I think. So, and I don't know, what other Nick Lodolo to the injured list and Mike Moustakas activated. Now, how excited is everyone about Mike Moustakas hitting the ball today? He had a good game today, right?
He wears that uniform.
He wears every square inch of that uniform. 2 for 3 today, scored a couple runs, knocked one in. You know,
hit the ball hard, too. Like, they were good hits.
I don't doubt that there's still the ability within Mike Moustakas to be a decent baseball player. Just the injuries he's dealt with, like specifically plantar fasciitis, which I've dealt with off and on for the last 5 years, it sucks the life out of your entire legs, you know, and you never know when it's going to hit. When it does, you don't know if it's going to be 3 days or 14 days or sometimes a month at times. I empathize with him tremendously, and it's part of the reason why I've not been more critical of the way that he's played since he's been with the Reds. But man, I hope he can actually just stay healthy, because you know he's not gonna be another world superstar, but if he could just be something akin to what the Mike Moustakas we hoped we'd see, I think there's still a little bit of that left in him. Offensively, I'm not sure why I want to see him play defense too much out there at this point, but man, today was at least a revelation where it was like, oh yeah, the Reds signed him and they couldn't give him away, so he's still on the team when he's healthy. Hopefully we can get a little bit more of that from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, defensively, don't ever count on him ever again. He's a designated hitter, frankly. What concerns me is the Reds really need him to hit. And unfortunately, he's 33 years old, and he's never hit since he's been in Cincinnati. And so, I don't know. You know, I hate it for the guy. I don't have any issues with Mike Moustakas. Personally, like, you know, he's never insulted me personally. I don't style, I guess.
I was a terrible hitter at 33 also, so I can empathize that there. So
I was a terrible hitter at a much younger age when Mike Moustakas was crushing baseballs. So, yeah, good for him. Good for him, I guess. Again, this is us squinting and hoping we see an actual player there. Although you don't really have to squint to see Mike Moustakas. Eugenio Suarez. Sorry. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
The world's
Eugenio Suarez.
Yes.
Has three home runs. 156 OPS plus for Eugenio Suarez. Go Gino, right? Good vibes only. I'm happy for him. Yeah, I agree. Nothing to say there. You want to answer some questions, guys? We have some viewer mail questions that'll get us into a few other things, and then we'll check out here and
let's go answer some questions.
All right, these questions, as always, come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, where you too can support the podcast. There we go. That's what I'm looking for. Before we do that, though, we do have a new member of the family. I mentioned him earlier, John York. John York joined the family this week by supporting us at Patreon. And so, as is our custom, we give a position out on the Beer League softball team. John York, I'm not sure what position he plays. Nate, you got any thoughts on?
And I always put too much time trying to figure out these positions. And I had a hard time with Mr. York. I ended up trying to settle on a flamethrower and righty, but then I remembered it's a Beer League softball team, and you can't do that. So maybe he is a flamethrower righty that got kicked out by the Beer League umpire for breaking the rules immediately, and then he goes and makes sure that the rest of the team is well-stocked with a cold one in their hands. Probably the most valuable player.
Okay, there we go. That's it. The most valuable player on the Beer League softball team. Now, I want to give you two questions to start out with here, two of you more questions in tandem, because it's a player that we need to talk about. The first comes from Kyle Kapler. Kyle starts with, would you go to a Reds game if they had had a sell the team Bob all head night? The answer to that is yes.
Yes.
but the other question was, at this point, would you rather see Scott Heinemann again or Aristides Aquino as our left, quote-unquote, lefty masher? We also had a question from Andrew Moran. Do you think Aristides Aquino could strike out with three swings and misses on a single pitch, like in Baseball Bugs with Bugs Bunny? What purpose does he serve on this team, or is there really nobody else that could take those at-bats? Can we just for a moment reflect on Aristides Aquino versus Scott Heinemann maybe, but yikes! Why is he still on the roster?
I choose Scott Heinemann for that answer because I had forgotten about Scott Heinemann, and I would like to say that about Aquino.
You want to forget it. I hate it. Aquino was great for a month. He was fun. That was exciting. That was an exciting August. And he does seem like a great guy. I love when he guns somebody out on the base paths. But yikes. This is as bad as a player can play. I mean, his batting average, 0.49. He's just striking out. Wick, what do we do? Are they afraid of losing him? He designated for an assignment. You're afraid of losing him? Is someone going to pick him up?
Yeah, he's out of options, so you can't just send him back to AAA Louisville. But at the same point in time, if you're ever going to continue to think he's going to be potentially a part of your organization, putting him on waivers right now might be the best possible time to do it because nobody's going to claim him. So if you really think that there's still a hot streak in there and there's some mechanical flaw, you put him on waivers right now and he's going to pass through and you send him to Louisville. And if he sorts it out, he sorts it out. He sorted it out once before and gave us that August a couple of years ago after he'd gotten designated for assignment the first time. The physical tools are there. I understand why people drool about him, but I don't know how much longer you have to watch to understand that it's not there right now, you know, and You mentioned earlier the T.J. Friedel love. I think the T.J. Friedel love is as much the backup quarterback love as it is anything else at this point, because when you see somebody who struggles this much get this much of a leash, you want that same leash for other people as well, and people who have kind of worked their way up and deserved it. And at this point in time, I don't see any particular reason why, lefty on lefty or not, T.J. Friedel or Alejo Lopez, who has been shoehorned out in left field a couple times before, doesn't deserve the same bit of chance that Aquino's gotten at this point, because he's not 21. He doesn't have three options left. You didn't sign him for $8 million, and you can't even admit it at some cost at this point. You're running him out there every single day, and he's striking out 50% of the time. It is what it is, and I don't know. I don't get it. I do not get it at this point.
My high school baseball coach did not approve of players striking out 50% of the time, which is the origin story of me as a high school tennis player.
Speaking of tennis, though, I think about Aquino often as I think about golfers sometime, where you look up in the past and you're like, oh yeah, that one guy won the Masters in like 98 or 2001, and then you never heard from him again.
He's still kicking.
Yeah, he got really hot. Yeah, he figured out how to hit a ball, and it was the greatest week of his life. And then he went back to not knowing how to hit the ball. And I think with Aquino, we kind of know that's what it was, that he got in that groove, and it was great. And it's not great anymore. And I don't know if it's ever going to be great again, but you can't afford to wait anymore, I don't think.
Just like if you're a Major League Baseball player, you are like one of the most impressive athletes in the world. Like you're a professional. You're one of the best in the entire world.
Mike Moustakas.
You're one of the best in the world at your craft. You are a one percenter. And if you just look at the numbers, anybody that listens to this podcast could come really, really close to producing at the same level Aquino is. All you have to do is just stick your bat out. And if you get lucky once, you pretty much have the same batting average.
I guarantee you my batting average would be at least plus or minus within 49 percentage points of his. Because mine would likely be zero, but that's pretty close to it. Yeah, he's kind of like the Chris Steins thing. You know, you have a great debut, and so people want to keep giving you shots maybe, and they think more of you. He had an incredible debut. But if you look at his minor league stats, that one year was the only year, really, that he had any kind of success. He has struggled his entire career. And I don't know. He's 28 at this point? I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure how he – I hate it. I mean, he's got a great nickname. He's the Punisher. He has a great actual name, Aristides Aquino, maybe one of my all-time Inner Circle Hall of Fame baseball names. He's got a great right arm. When he, and he's not a bad defender necessarily. I just
make him the fifth outfielder, you know, like every team, especially with 28 guys in the roster, make him the fifth outfielder. But you're batting fifth or sixth every single day. I mean, come on, you know, let him make a catch and throw 103 miles an hour to the plate in the eighth and ninth innings. That's fine. That's right. Tremendous. Good teams have guys like that, and that's how they use them. That's the only way they use them.
There's been plenty of times, too many times, when he was the one protecting Joey Votto in the lineup. If you're worried about Votto's production, are they going to pitch to him?
Again, fifth outfielder, maybe he runs into one, hits a three-run home run in the ninth inning when you pinch hit him at some point, you know, against the right pitcher. I don't know. We spent too much time talking about Aristides, and I feel bad talking about him. And I hope he's awesome.
Might be the last time we talk about him, though, so you never know.
It's maybe the last one.
I hope he's awesome for the Giants in a year or two.
That's only Reds pitchers that become awesome for the Giants. Tsunami of bad. That's Aristides Aquino's new nickname. Oh, mercy. Rich Thompson asks a question that he's talking about a different farmer, but who's the better Buck Farmer, who I know is one of Wick's favorite players, Buck Farmer, Buck Martinez, Buck Showalter, Buck Weaver, or Buck O'Neill? How is it that we have a Buck Farmer? And be careful how you say that. This is a family podcast. And he's the least productive farmer on the team. How's that possible? Buck Farmer.
I'm going a different direction. I'm going to go with Buck Wheat.
Buck Wheat. The version played by
Kyle gets better rain and he's got better drainage on his, whereas Buck's a little bit more, it's a kind of a convex landscape, and it doesn't hold its water very well, and it's got too much sun coming on it. So, you know, Kyle's crops are doing tremendous at this point in time. I grew up in Kentucky. I'm sorry. I got ag econ on the brain. To the question though, I'm going to go Buck Showalter, and I'm very glad Buck Showalter is back in baseball, because for me and for our generation, he's kind of the archetype manager. You know, he's that guy who is always chomping on something. If there's nothing in there to chomp on, he's just in there chomping. I've always appreciated the way he's come at the game, and I'm very glad that he is back in baseball this year after a couple-year hiatus. He's always been very special. But Buck O'Neill, I think technically speaking, should be the answer to that question. But I had to give Buck Showalter a shout-out because he's always been one of those baseball personalities where the game is better when he's in it.
Absolutely. I started to say Buck Weaver because Buck Weaver, you know, was, of course, the third baseman for the 1919 Chicago White Sox, who lost completely on the level to the 1919 Cincinnati Reds, their first World Series championship. But I'm going to go with Buck O'Neill, who was the subject of probably my favorite baseball book, Joe Posnanski's what's the name of it now? The Soul of Baseball, something like that. It's my favorite baseball book, and I can't remember the title, but it's amazing.
I thought about going with Bucky Dent, but then you said it's a family podcast, so I can't go with that. So, but Bucky effing Dent is not on the list.
That's right. Absolutely. Aaron effing Boone kind of took that role a little bit later. That's a little Reds connection there, but mercy. I'm sorry if your kids are listening. Well, whatever. That's really not that bad.
The Reds weren't good then either. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. If you're letting your kids listen to a podcast about the Reds, you have to assume there's going to be some salty language. And if this is as salty as it gets, you know, you're probably okay. Joey Gaditza asks, "Hey guys, so this has been a tough season so far." That's a good call, Joey. "What else other than watching the Reds lose night after night have you been doing for entertainment these days?" "I have watched some movies that I've enjoyed recently, and I've watched some minor league baseball and some college baseball. That's what I've been doing. What about you guys?"
I have done some of that with Chad. I've been watching the NBA playoffs, go Suns. And I recently powered through the first season, the only season so far, of Severance on Apple TV Plus, and it was super weird and kind of awesome.
Wick?
So I'm out here in Denver. I moved out here about 11 years ago, and getting outside and avoiding baseball and doing some backpacking trips is one of my biggest passions. And based on how National Park backcountry permits go, you have to put in all your permit requests in basically March to find out if you're going to get the availability to be able to go do some of these things in July, August, September, when the snow melts and these things are fun. So I've been busy the last couple of weeks trying to get my I's dotted and T's crossed on what it is I'm going to try to pull off at some point later this summer. And I did land a permit to go spend 6 days backpacking in Yellowstone National Park in August, which I found out about a couple of weeks ago. So I've been busy trying to coordinate planning that, which I'm incredibly excited about. I've been in the park a couple of different times. Never spent a night in the backcountry up there, but I've got two of my oldest good friends in tow to come with me on that trip. And so I've been planning way, way too far in advance for this one because I can't get it off my mind. And it's not for another, let's see, it's 4 months. It's not for another 75 or so Reds losses from now. But I'm excited about that one. And as a result of landing that one, now I'm trying to work backwards and figure out some smaller trips to go on the front end, so I'm better prepped for that one as well. So I'm pointing my eyes and my ears towards the mountains over my shoulders at this point.
That's a way better answer than we gave.
Incredible answer. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of crap television too, don't get me wrong. So yeah, that's been in there too.
Well, two things here. Number one, bucket list, I need to join Wick for a backpacking trip one of these days. So I would love to do that. The other thing is, I'm a little disappointed in you because, you know, you planned this trip and just are assuming the Reds are not going to be in the playoff hunt in August. So that's upsetting. The two movies I've seen recently that I do recommend, let me just go ahead and say them because I have to do this. And, you know, it's my show. Everything Everywhere All at Once is incredible. One of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And then just today I saw The Northman, One of our brothers did not like that, Nate. But it was great. It was fantastic. So The Northman. It's a Viking movie.
I was curious to get your take on this. I went and watched it last night, and I do not share your opinion.
You agree with our other
I was entertained. I thought it was a beautiful film.
I loved it.
This is why you're the critic on the cast.
This is the perfect kind of response to make me watch this now, because now I have to. If you both said either one, I would just run over the shoulder and forgot about it. But now it's like I got to know.
We're like Rotten Tomatoes. Chad is like that first rating you see, the critics, then I'm the casual viewer. I think that does line up with this film.
The tomato and the spilled popcorn. Gotcha.
Exactly. I would say if you're on the fence, go watch Everything Everywhere All at Once instead of The Northman, though, because it's much better. Have either of you seen that one?
Not yet. It's next up.
You need to. It's amazing. All right. Enough of that nonsense. Nobody comes here for my terrible movie reviews. Joe Farsing, the 2022 Reds, but as lame comic book superheroes. For example, Nick Senzel as the fragile fighter, or Mike Moustakas as the arthritic Avenger. Who else you got? I don't know. I had I had Hunter Green as the fighting phenom or something like that, but I don't know that I have anything good. Either of you have anything? Nate, you got anything?
I mean, Mr. Fantastic seems a little easy. The Punisher? Is that lame enough?
Oh, yeah.
The superpowers are lame.
Yeah. He doesn't punish.
Over at Red Reporter, we nicknamed Kyle Farmer the Combine. Because he's out there harvesting ribbies left and right.
So, The combine.
That's the best I got on this one, I think.
That's a good one. Jace Linford asks at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. I saw this on Twitter and thought it could be a fun discussion. First of all, don't go on Twitter. Never tweet. What could the Castellinis and the Reds front office realistically do starting today to start repairing the relationship with the fans? What could they do starting today? I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure that the Castellinis, given Phil's comments recently, I'm not sure they could do anything that would that people would take seriously. Although, on the other hand, local print media will print whatever they say and carry the water for them. So, I don't. Is there anything you guys can think of that they could do today?
They could
go ahead.
So they could issue an apology that came off with a touch of sincerity. It's not going to fix things, but it's a start. They could just say something like, hey, man, we messed up. First off, shouldn't have said those things. It's ridiculous. It's out of touch. Second off, we made some moves that at the time we thought were right moves. Looking back at it, we see that we were wrong. We are going to put baseball people in positions to make baseball decisions, keep our hands out of it a little bit more. We're going to learn from our mistakes. Here are the next steps. Here's what we're looking at. Here's what we're planning on doing to make this better. None of that's going to happen. It's pie in the sky, but it's something they could try to do. They could start with an apology, a real one.
The truth is, some of that could have been said by Phil in his second interview. I understand. I know why they're frustrated. We've screwed up over the years, and of course, said he doubled down. So yeah, the chance of that happening, I don't know. But is there anything they can have that?
Do you happen to have that second interview on video? I haven't seen it.
No,
I don't want to put you in a tough spot here, but some comments from earlier this morning on the radio are making their rounds on social media. I was just going to try to give you a platform to respond to kind of what you said earlier today, because I think some fans are taking it the wrong way, possibly, or you're feeling like they're rubbed the wrong way.
Okay, what you have to be more specific.
He didn't even know how he screwed up. That red blazer and the... Oh my gosh, trust fund Phil, man. You're the guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you had your chance. Like, literally, that was your chance. This is going to sound rough on the front end, but what I would like to see, or what could they do? Trade Luis Castillo tomorrow. Pick a direction.
I get it,
pick a direction, Don't sign Tommy Pham. Pick a direction and go with it. That's what I don't they've dug themselves up at such a deep hole where they can't go trade for anybody right now. They can't rescue a 2022 season. There's nobody out there to sign. You can't do that. You're not going to get the fans back because, as we just watched, you had your opportunity to say, wow, that came off terribly. I'm really, really sorry about that. Free parking for the next month. Like, come to Great American Ballpark. You had your chance for that. Like, nobody's even going to hear your apology at this point because you blew the first apology. Get a direction. Like, that's what I want. You know, get a direction and commit to it. And that's, and if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. But we've seen this team go just everywhere, absolutely everywhere, and not commit to anything, not trust anything, not stick with anything, hire Cal Bodie, get rid of Cal Bodie, like just boom, 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 pick a direction and go with it. And, you know, if it's the future, make sure the future's got all the pieces you need to make the future right. You know, losing 120 games this year and picking first overall next year is going to help that, I get. You know, it's what you try to do with Senzel and India and Green and all those other gigantically high draft picks. But commit to it and don't go get Mike Minor for $10 million after you hit your magic number low and then you just come and spend a bit. Commit to what you're doing out there. And that's the one thing I could at least begin to trust in. And I would write a lot more about the minor leagues than I would about the Reds right now, you know, because at least we know that that pipeline was right there and that's what they were committing for. And I'd schedule a lot more backpacking trips for the next 2 years because it'd be 2025 before the Reds are really worth, you know, coming up and sharpening the elbows and punching around, you know?
Absolutely. But really, there's the only answer to this is to Jace's question, what could the Castellanis do to starting today to start repairing the fans' relationship? There's really only one thing. And if you're not watching on YouTube, you don't see the glorious billboard that says hash brown, sell the team, Bob. All right, lightning round for these last few questions. Let's run through them if we can. James Urban, I think I figured it out. The Reds just decided to have a month-long April Fool's joke, right? Can't wait to go undefeated in May. Yeah, except in your scenario, James, the April Fool's, we, the fans, are the fools. Hooper Powell, I'm planning on going to see Luis Castillo pitch Friday night in Columbus. My question is, do the idiot owners of the Reds get money from going to minor league games? And if so, should I spend that money going to see Alabama in concert instead? Well, I would say go see Luis Castillo and have a good time at the old ball yard. That's probably going to be fun. But I don't know. Alabama? I mean,
maybe. I've had fun at an Alabama concert before. It was 20 years ago, but I had fun.
You're going to play in Texas. Got to be a fiddle in the band.
Got to be a fiddle in the band.
All right, a little bit of Riverfront historical information for those of you. Nate and I both played high school basketball fairly poorly. But our local high school that we played for, you warmed up to Mountain Music by Alabama because, I don't know, we were, you know, out, you can hear the way I talk. We were out in the middle of the sticks.
It was not a private school.
It was not a private school. Play me some Mountain Music. My grandma and grandpa used to play. Andrew Morin, do you think Aristides Aquino could start? Oh, we already asked that question. Charlie Browning. Oh, we got to. I got to check out here. I'm losing it here. Charlie Browning, what will it take for fans to begin referring to Buck Farmer as Buck Senior, and Kyle as Buck Junior? After Buck Junior's 4 double night, I believe he's earned it. No, we've decided that's a good idea, Charlie. But no, he's the combine. We're gonna adopt that. Joseph Prince asks, is it 1982 all over again? What do you think, Nate? What are your memories of 1982?
Non-existent. Joseph, I'm sorry. I cannot answer this question. I'm not qualified. I will leave it to our more seasoned veterans.
Which is me, because I know Wick doesn't remember 1982 either.
Couldn't they technically have finished last twice in 1982? Wasn't that the year?
That was 83. 81 was the year. They were good
that year. Yeah, they split up into halves, and they finished second in both halves, but had the best overall record, but then they missed them. 82 was the year they were just god-awful. Johnny Bench played third base in 82. Johnny Bench could probably play third base right now for these Reds. Maybe try
he's no Colin Moran.
No runs, no drips, no errors.
Exactly. I don't remember 1982 either, but I did become a Reds fan in 1983 because I am old as something we're not going to say. Rex Scott. The Reds, as of today, have the worst team pitching stat in the majors and are next to last in team hitting. They do lead the majors in fielding, which is something. He says, just to be clear, I'm citing team ERA, batting average, and fielder percentage. So make of that what you will. But how much of this underperforming do you guys attribute to all the injuries we've had? And what other factors are key to explaining these abysmal stats? My thoughts are, yes, injuries have certainly played a part in what's happened so far, obviously. But the fact that ownership and management did not plan for any depth, because every team has injuries, maybe not this many, that's also a huge part of it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's – yeah, injuries are a part of it. Either of you have anything to add to that?
I think that when we were coming into this season with all of our unbridled optimism, we were trying to squint and find ways that this team could be good, could be competitive. And if you only have to list like 2, 3, 4 things that need to break your way for a team to be good, you know, that's not a bad position to be in. But looking back on it, we were listing like 14, 15 things that needed to fall correctly for the Reds to be a 500 team. And it turns out that zero of those things have happened because Brandon Drury being the best player on the team was not on my Reds offseason bingo card.
Yeah, a really little thing yesterday, because prior to today's game, the Cincinnati Reds were slugging .285 as a team. And for whatever reason, because traumatic things tend to stick in my head longer than others, .285 jumped out at me because I knew exactly that that was the precise slugging percentage that Willie Taveras had as a Red in 2009. He slugged .285. And Willie Taveras as a Red to date has been the most traumatic thing that's happened to me, is watching a baseball team try to exist. So I wrote an article titled "The Cincinnati Reds Are Willie Taveras," because they're collectively slugging .285. Injuries are a huge part of that. Like, this team was designed to have Jonathan Eddy and Tyler Stevenson be the two best players on it. And they've both been absent, for better or for worse, for reasons under control and beyond their control. But when you fall all the way back to those two guys being the two that you're leaning on most, and then they're both not there, and then 38-year-old Joey Votto, who you were hoping could turn back the clock to last year, not to 2, 3 years ago, not being there, it's the worst team in baseball. We've watched the worst team in baseball, and there's nothing about the results that should be surprising given what you've watched.
Well, thanks for that, Rick.
Just wrap and tie a bow on this guy right here, right?
Last question.
Can't wait for you guys to have me back again. Sorry about that.
You're welcome back anytime you want to be here. TJ Hurston asks, as a Reds fan from the lost generation, I was born just after the World Series in 1995, so that's really the lost generation. Reds have not won a playoff series since. How much do you recommend rewatching old Reds games? I think I would explode if Joey Votto hit a home run to give the Reds a 2-0 lead in the World Series. Rewatching old Reds games, I don't know. You know, sure. I guess it's hard for me to say. You know, I rewatched that 1990 World Series video a billion times when I was, a younger man. I have the DVDs of the 1975 World Series that, it's fun, I guess, but and on YouTube you can get the 1990 World Series games. Go watch them, I guess, but I don't know. I want this team to be good. I want the 2022 Reds to be good. So
I say definitely go back and watch the old videos, because at least then you can envision the scenario that justifies being a Reds fan. Because if it isn't for that constant pursuit to get back to that 1990 Cincinnati crowd, that's the only reason to continue being a fan.
I'd say three things jump off the page of me that's 100% scream yes. And the first is, I want everybody who's out there to understand the Where's Quinones reference. Everybody needs to know that reference. Watch it and find it and use it as often as possible. It's tremendous. Secondly, look at that AstroTurf and see the football numbers in the outfield and understand what that team played on. Because it literally is a completely different sport than what the baseball players are playing in Great American Ballpark right now. But as a part of that, that also segues into watching Barry Larkin, watching Eric Davis, and watching the best players of what you just missed out on, and understanding why they only played 120-ish games a year, because they were literally running around on concrete. It's the talent that those players had and that that team had, and even some of the teams beyond just the 1990 team, and you get into the Bip Roberts era and the Ron Gant years and Reggie Sanders and just some tremendous, tremendous baseball players that played for the Reds in the 90s. Watch Jose Rijo pitch, because, like, talk about power pitchers now and guys running up there 98-ish, 99 miles an hour starter. You could see Jose Rijo being very successful in today's baseball game, just as he was back then too. Yeah, watch him. And in fact, I'm saying all this right now. I'm trying to remember the last time I went back and watched some games from that era. And I probably should do more of that than watch what we got right now, to be quite frank.
And also, Barry Larkin's playing and not commentating. Huge plus.
A couple things here. Number one, Wick's convinced me. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I would not be sitting here in 2022 still talking about this stupid franchise if not for the fact that I, you know, experienced that 1990 World Series. And then the teams afterwards, the 1995 team is probably my favorite Reds team ever. You know, they lost in the National League Championship Series, but I love that team. Barry Larkin, Ron Gant, Reggie Sanders, Pete Shurik. I love that team. And so, I need to go back and rewatch some of those. The other thing is, where's Quinones? I do have to mention, because Nate did some work. We now have a t-shirt in our store. If you want to go look at that, probably need to get a picture so we can show it here, but we have a Where's Quinones t-shirt at riverfrontcincy.com. So go and,
good work. You know, very good work.
I know that's a classic reference. And if people don't understand that as a Reds fan, I kind of judge you a little bit. That's up there with anything with Eric Davis hitting a home run, you know, in game one of the things you need to know.
If you're old enough to have had a VHS cassette player in your house, you should know that. If you didn't have one of those, I'll give you a pass, but you should still get caught up on it because it's on YouTube.
Yeah, Nate had to endure me playing that VHS cassette many, many times when he was a kid. So anyway, any final thoughts, guys, before we wrap up here? First, I'll go to you, Nate. Any final thoughts?
Hey, better days are ahead. They have to be. So we're gonna stay tuned. We're going to root for the Reds. We're going to have a good time. And if we're not, then we're gonna laugh through it. I had a good time here tonight. And, yeah, appreciate it, guys.
I am going to see Hunter. I'm going to go see Hunter Green pitch tomorrow. I'm heading down the road to Coors Field and going to catch at least the first five innings of that game. I don't know if I'll stick around for all of it, but it's close enough to where I can't say no to that. Was hoping to get a chance to see Nick Lodolo pitch as well, but apparently that's going to get bumped back, so I'm missing that one. But I will take that opportunity because for the same reason I'm still here doing this podcast and still writing about the Cincinnati Reds, there still is a lot of talent out there if they can ever just all stay healthy at the same time to watch potentially turn into something down the road. But this April has been perhaps the worst month of baseball I have watched. That I've watched.
Yeah. There we go. Tsunami of bad.
Wick, before we go, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me at redreporter.com. I swear we're going to get the Red Reporter podcast rebooted at some point. We've had it on so many different platforms for so long, mostly because I had an old laptop that I finally got replaced right before the start of the season, and I couldn't host anything because I couldn't stream anything. So look for that at some point in the near future once the Reds actually do something good enough to make me want to reboot it all and do that. But find us at Red Reporter at Red Reporter on Twitter or redreporter.com on the internet, where we try to have at least a little bit of fun with covering the Cincinnati Reds baseball franchise. So thank you guys for having me, and it's been a blast per usual.
And while we don't recommend getting on Twitter, if you happen to be on Twitter, give Wick a follow. He is one of the funniest, best Twitter follows in the land.
You got to laugh through it, right? If you're a Reds fan still, you got to find something to laugh about, right?
It's precisely why we like having Wick on the show, is because we're trying to figure out reasons to laugh. And if you've ever been at Red Reporter over the years, you know they're trying to laugh through the pain.
Oh, we're trying. So.
Well, Wick, this was great. Nate, as always, it was fun. Thank you all for listening. Obviously, you can find us at the YouTube, youtube.com/RiverfrontCincy. We're at Riverfront Cincy on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere, and patreon.com/RiverfrontCincy. But do me a favor. Go to YouTube. I don't even care if you actually watch us on YouTube, but go there, give us a like and a subscribe, okay? I mean, is that too much to ask? It's free. Come on. follow us everywhere. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, we're like amazing or something. Nate Wick, this was great. Thank you all so much for joining us. For Nate Dawson, for Wick Terrell, RedReporter.com, this, and for Willie Taveras. This is Chad Dawson saying, so long, everyone.